Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we will continue reading from the June-July 2025 issue of Guideposts with articles like Beyond My Control. First, we will start where we left off last time in the article Making Things Right by Diane Stark. There was a time when I felt our real connection was through our shared faith. Now I let myself feel that again. Before we hung up, Dad said, "I want you to know that I'm proud of you. I always have been, even when I haven't shown it very well. I guess I regret that. You're solid, Diane." Solid, not fluffy. When I told him that things were all right between us, I meant it. They were as right as they would ever be, and that was okay. My father's imperfect love helped me recognize my Heavenly Father's perfect love, a love that never has to be earned. That was the last time I spoke to my dad. He died a short time after that call, but I finally knew my dad loved me, however he struggled to show it, and however late that love came. Our relationship was flawed and often a source of pain for me, and I can never change that. He was my father, and I can never change that. He and I had trouble connecting for most of my life, but in the end, he tried to make things right, and in the end, it was enough. Generation to generation, grandma camp. I did it for the grandkids every year, and every year I felt as if I had to outdo myself. By Peggy Frizon, Rexford, New York. On a Monday morning in late August, my daughter and son-in-law dropped off their two girls in their bags. Grace and Lily scrambled on top of me, a tangle of skinny arms, wispy red braids, giggles, hugs, and kisses. "Hooray, it's time for grandma camp," they said. "It's going to be great," I said, pushing aside my tiredness to match their excitement. I'd stayed up late making sure I had all the supplies for today's projects lined up. I'm blessed to live close to my grandchildren. My husband Mike and I babysit and often take the girls for overnights. And for the past four summers, I devoted an entire week to something extra special, grandma camp. It's a week full of crafts, stories, snacks, and adventures, all wrapped around a fun and educational theme. This year, our theme is All God's Creatures, I told my granddaughters. I wanted to share my passion for animals and animal welfare, and I hoped Lily and Grace would come away from grandma camp full of awe for all creatures, great and small. I'd been preparing for this week since spring, throwing myself into research and planning, trying to get every detail. Partway through my prep, Mike walked into the living room, which I'd turned into grandma camp headquarters, and did a double take. "You got so many craft supplies and books piled up here, I almost didn't see you," he said. "There's so much I want the girls to learn," I told him. "Do you think maybe you're going a little bit overboard?" Mike said. "No, I have to do this," I said. "They're going to love all these crafts. Plus, I want to come up with a service project for the Humane Society and teach the girls about wildlife conservation." I opened a heavy reference book and started jotting interesting facts about wild animals in my notes. Mike left me to it. My hard work paid off. By the start of grandma camp, I had all the craft supplies and books organized according to the day I planned to use them. Within minutes of the girls' arrival, they were literally jumping for joy, and my neatly stacked books ended up in a heap. "Grandma, which animal are we going to do first?" 9-year-old Grace asked. "Don't forget about unicorns," 7-year-old Lily added, waving her favorite stuffy in my face. I picked up my notebook and began looking over the pages of plans I had for the first day of grandma camp. It all started 4 years earlier. Our daughter had asked if Mike and I could watch the girls while she and our son-in-law attended a week-long conference out of state. I jumped at the opportunity. I wanted to be an important and familiar presence in my granddaughters' lives, to be more than just an older woman they saw a few times a year and felt awkward around, as my grandmothers had been to me. That first grandma camp had been simple. Some crafts, stories, trips to the park. The next summer, I got the idea to build our week together around a theme. Every year, grandma camp grew bigger and better, and every year, I felt as if I had to outdo myself. I really hit my stride with last year's paint and sip camp. Every morning, we sipped slushies and juices while studying a famous painter, then created works of art in their style. I arranged sunflowers in a vase, and we tried out Van Gogh's techniques. We covered marbles in paint and rolled them in a box to make abstract art like Jackson Pollock's. Camp culminated with an art show, the girls in their Sunday dresses explaining their masterpieces to the rest of our family. It took me a week to recover. This year, I was tired before camp ever began. I led the girls out to the deck. They were so full of energy, I decided to skip the lesson on dog care and get right into an activity. First up, paintings featuring paw prints. Grace and Lily rounded up Pete, one of our cooperative golden retrievers, as I readied the newspaper smocks, canvases, and paints. "Okay, here's what we do," I said. We washed and dried Pete's paw, then dipped it into a tray of paint. As patient as Pete was, he wasn't exactly enthusiastic about this craft project. When we pressed his paw onto the canvases, he wiggled, smudging the prints. Paint splattered everywhere. Then Pete flopped onto the tray itself, covering his chest and belly in color. I lunged to keep him from painting the deck floor. "Pete's purple," the girls giggled. I was too busy trying to clean up the mess and the dog to be amused. "We'll finish the paintings later," I said. "Let's do a craft for dogs at the shelter." We moved on to making braided fleece dog toys, and I badly underestimated how long each would take. We got only a handful done. Next, we dove into a book about penguins. The girls got hungry halfway through, so we had to stop for a snack. We were supposed to add green stems and leaves to Pete's paw prints to turn them into purple irises, but we ran out of time. Nothing was going right. That night, after baths and toothbrushing, I read to Lily and Grace from Paw Verbs for Kids, a children's devotional book about animals. Then came bedtime prayers and goodnight kisses. I collapsed in a chair in the den and said a prayer of my own. "God, help this week to get better. Show me how to give the girls what they need." Mike sat beside me. "You look wiped out, Pig. Maybe you'd better turn in early." "I can't." I grabbed my laptop and opened the browser. "I need to figure out more habitat backgrounds to make." "Do you?" Mike asked, putting his hand on my shoulder. "Yes, the girls are too old now to just make simple crafts, and I want them to learn something, too. Growing up, I hadn't been entertained in this way. I'd been expected to entertain myself. After my parents' divorce, my mom was too busy working and stressed to plan activities. My grandparents lived out of town. I barely knew them. When I became a mom, I made being involved with my two kids a priority. I volunteered in their classrooms, led my daughter's Girl Scout troops, and cheered on my son at basketball games. I wanted to be there for my grandkids, too, to make wonderful memories that they'd carry with them their whole lives. Grandma Camp was my big opportunity. Over the next few days, Grace and Lily and I crafted penguins, leopards, foxes, and rabbits out of cardboard, empty soda bottles, modeling clay, wood, and felt. We looked up information on animal habitats and made backgrounds to display each species. We read more books together, hiked in the woods, and went on a nature scavenger hunt. The girls were having fun. Still, every night after they went to sleep, I would look over what I'd planned for the day and see the things we didn't accomplish. I kept feeling I was letting my granddaughters down. The last day dawned bright and sunny, perfect for visiting the environmental center I'd looked into. But when I double-checked the center's hours, I found out it had unexpectedly closed for the day. Another letdown. "How about we go to the beach," Mike said. The lake near us had a big sandy beach. "Yay," the girls shouted. I glared at Mike. How was a trip to the beach going to help? The girls needed an activity that was educational. That was the point of Grandma Camp, right? But Lily and Grace were so excited I couldn't say no. We threw together a picnic lunch, packed some sunscreen and towels. On our way out the door, I grabbed my notebook. The girls had a blast swimming, digging in the sand, and lugging buckets of water for their castle moats. I sat in my beach chair next to Mike and flipped through my notes. The week had not gone the way I'd wanted. I'd tried but fallen short. What could I have done differently? What was I missing? "Wow," I heard Grace exclaim. I looked up from my notebook. The girls stood shoulder to shoulder in the lake. Grace pointed toward the opposite shore. "There's the biggest bird I've ever seen." Lily shaded her eyes with her hand. "He has a long beak. Do you think it's for fishing?" Grace playfully splashed her sister. "Duh, that's why he lives by the water." Lily noticed me watching. "Hey, Grandma, look at that bird." I smiled. "It's a heron," I said. I searched my mind for some facts, something educational I could in part about the heron, but the only thing that came out of my mouth was, "Isn't he beautiful?" That's when it hit me. I'd wanted so badly to give the girls everything I'd yearned for when I was their age that I'd overcompensated and lost sight of what really mattered. Maybe God had his own plan. My granddaughters didn't need me to fill every day with perfectly planned and executed activities. They just wanted to be with me in the moment, taking in the wonders of creation. "That heron is amazing," Grace said. "Grandma, come on in," Lily said. "The water's fine." My notebook dropped onto the sand as I stood. The girls ran out to meet me. They each took a hand and led me into the lake. We waded deeper, the sun warming my shoulders. Minnows darted in the water, and a family of ducks paddled beyond the ropes. Across the lake, the heron stood still, strong and striking. I turned and waved to Mike. "Come join us," I called. "The water's fine." For more on this story, see Family Room. Positive people. I was losing my vision. Was I also losing my hope? Goodwill Greeting by Roberta Messner, Huntington, West Virginia. It should have been a wonderful day, a day to celebrate. The genetic disease that had caused benign craniofacial tumors for most of my life had subsided. My battle with mouth cancer had been declared history after 15 years. Now I was at the ophthalmologist's office where a new lens prescription would doubtless fix my niggling vision issue. I'd been filling in missing letters of words, reaching for what I thought was a Winnie the Pooh book and finding out its spine said "Winning with People." Moving from window to work at my computer, upgrading light bulbs, Dr. Skolick's voice seemed 100 miles away. As she finished the exam, she gave me the same diagnosis my father had been given 3 decades earlier. "You have macular degeneration, the wet kind, the worst." Because of my dad, I knew all about the disease, how abnormal blood vessels grow and leak blood and fluid, attacking the macula, the part of the retina responsible for sharp central vision. It's the leading cause of blindness in older adults. Remembering the utter devastation of my dad's last years as a legally blind man sucked the oxygen out of the room. Even as Dr. Skolick spoke about medical advancements of monthly eye injections that might restore and stabilize my failing sight, the voice in my spirit spoke louder. "You restored so much, God. I was finally getting healthy. Don't I deserve a reprieve?" My sister Rebecca tried to comfort me as we walked to the car. "God's always had a way, Roberta," she said. "He has one now. He isn't finished with you." Maybe not, but in that moment I told myself, "You will never feel anything close to joy again." Plain and simple, I was disappointed. In life, in God, to risk hope one more time was the scariest thing I could imagine. On the ride home, Rebecca couldn't coax one word out of me. Then suddenly I heard myself say the oddest thing, "We've got to go to Goodwill. The place of second chances," I called it, where I could find all the fashions I'd missed out during the years I was sick. I'd been there just the day before my whole world changed. I walked into Goodwill. The store's greeter, Joseph, stood with his white cane in front of a mural that proclaimed, "Be good, you want to see in the world." He called out in a chipper voice, "Welcome to Goodwill. Anything with a green tag is half price." "Thanks for letting me know," I said. Today of all days, I wasn't in the mood to chat. Joseph recognized my voice right off. "Something's wrong, Roberta," he said. "You've lost your song." "Macular degeneration, the worst," I finally managed. Joseph parked his cane on my cart and asked if he might pray for me. As he spoke, a few shoppers gathered in close to listen. Only an hour before, in my doctor's exam chair, God had seemed so far away. I'd pleaded that someone somewhere would have the answer for a soul shredded into 1,000 pieces, a soul more ragged than anything in a thrift shop. Joseph detailed every unspoken fear that I had, as well as the promises of God from the Bible, whose words he'd only heard. He ended the prayer by asking God to give me, not himself, the eyes of an eagle. I felt a flutter of hope, the kind of hope it was worth risking one more time. Now Joseph, who walks by faith, not by sight, is my daily teacher. Goodwill has become my walking track, where I log 2 miles down those aisles in gratitude and prayer. Joseph says that people's voices tell you so much of what you need to know about them. There are kind voices, angry voices, impatient voices, want a bargain voices, he told me. Mostly, I'm glad you're here voices. Sometimes if you listen close, you can hear heartbreak. That's God telling you they're there. You're there for a reason. The eagle eyes Joseph prayed for nudged a new prayer from me, that I might see God in a deeper way. Part of that quest has been looking back and discerning the hand of God at work in my life. My eyes now, affected by macular degeneration, had once been embedded with tumors. Thanks to miracles, no more. Circumstances haven't always been what I wanted, but God's care has never let me down. He will never fail me despite the uncertainty of this condition. I love to tell others his promises are sure for them too. Because of the monthly eye injections, my story is taking a different turn than my father's. My distance vision has improved to 20/30 with glasses. Adaptive aids help with close-up work. On a recent walk of faith down the aisles of Goodwill, I spotted a jacket with the look of fine worsted wool. I stepped closer. Vibrant red and pink roses popped against the black. My heart thundered. I was able to make out the finely detailed embroidery. What came from my lips at that moment was almost like a song. I can see. No one was more thrilled than Joseph, whose prayer for me had opened a new vision of the world through the lens of God's love. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime, on demand, at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guideposts magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guideposts' other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Things in threes, stroke of luck, three wondrous moments on the link that prove golf is more than a game. Mary Jane McCartney, Northport, New York. I waited for my brother John to make his putt at the Sunken Meadow Golf Course in Fort Salonga, New York. We hadn't played golf together in about 40 years, not since I was a freshman at Skidmore College, upstate in Saratoga Springs, 200 miles away. One weekend, my family had come to visit, and we'd spent an afternoon at the Saratoga Spa golf course, mostly because my dad loved the game so much. It was the only time John and I had ever played around with him, so I always associated Dad with that particular course. I picture Dad now tucking that little pencil behind his ear after he'd marked up our scorecard and smiling as if nothing made him prouder than playing his favorite sport with his two kids. If only Dad could see us here today, I thought, he'd be so happy. John finally made his putt. My gaze traveled past the ball and a few feet away to the 17th hole and to the crumpled piece of paper on the otherwise pristine grounds. "Go pick it up," something inside me said. The thought persisted, and certainly Dad wouldn't have overlooked trash on the green. I walked over, reached for the paper, and smoothed its edges. It was an old scorecard. The names scribbled on it were unfamiliar, but the name of the golf course sure wasn't. The Saratoga Spa. Dad was still keeping score. Jessica Reed, Walton, New York. "Please, Dad, please," my 11-year-old brother Kevin said. "Let me drive the golf cart." I rolled my eyes. Leave it to my older brother to disrupt a perfectly nice day of golf at the country club. After listening to Kevin go on and on for 8 holes straight, Dad finally gave in and moved to the passenger seat. Dad didn't need any more stress. A year earlier, he'd undergone triple bypass surgery. He wasn't supposed to exert himself, but one of Dad's greatest joys in life was the game of golf, so his physician recommended that he continue to play with a little assistance from a golf cart. Kevin drove us over to the 9th hole. Dad and I got out, and, "Help!" Kevin yelled. "Someone please help me." I spun around and gasped in horror. Kevin was zooming across the golf course at full speed, headed up an incline toward a cliff. The gas pedal on the cart must have stuck somehow. Kevin frantically turned the steering wheel to avoid the cliff and was thrown to the ground. The cart landed on top of him, wheel still spinning. Dad sprinted to Kevin and lifted the cart, all 600 pounds of it. Kevin scrambled out from underneath, and Dad lowered the cart gently onto the grass. Clearly, Dad had had a little assistance. Karen McLean, Denver, Colorado. Boston or Denver? Denver or Boston? Ugh, how would I ever decide? I was a few years out of college, living at home with my parents in Virginia and working a gig that was far from my dream job. I needed a change of pace, a change of scenery, somewhere to put down some roots. I sort of had feelings for this guy in Boston. He wanted me to move there. Then again, I just helped a friend move to Denver, Colorado, and had fallen in love with all the fresh mountain air out there. What was a girl to do? I called my friend Susan, desperate for advice. "Let's talk it over at the driving range," she said. "The driving range? I was in the middle of a midlife crisis and she wanted to play golf? Come on," she said. "It'll help you clear your head." We hit a bucket of balls, but I still felt confused. I turned to Susan to ask her opinion on my dilemma for the bazillionth time. Before I could get the words out, though, I saw it. A tractor at the edge of the driving range. Someone had spray-painted on it a big red letters. One word, Denver. The place where I eventually settled down and got married. The place where I found way more than fresh mountain air. A preview from Where I Found God Today. Do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased. Hebrews 13, verse 16, NIV. It was the usual Saturday frenzy at the grocery store. Heads down, everyone hustled by, strangers in a silent ballet. But last week, something drew my attention as I neared the dairy coolers. A frail hand, etched with a map of blue veins, strained to reach the top shelf. An elderly woman was struggling to lift a gallon of milk. Suddenly, a lanky teen, earbuds dangling, showed up beside her. With a basketball player's grace, he snagged the milk, then set it in her basket. Her eyes crinkled in gratitude. "Thank you, young man," she rasped, her voice thick with emotion. She reached into a pocket and offered the boy a crumpled dollar bill, but he flashed a grin, the kind that reached his eyes and shook his head. "We all need a little help sometimes," he said. He took her small hand in his and gave it a gentle squeeze. Warmth spread through me as I witnessed this exchange. I saw God at work in that simple act of reaching for a carton of milk. The teenage boy didn't hesitate to help. His kindness reflected God's caring. The woman's gratitude showed the ripple effect of such a small gesture. There in that crowded dairy aisle, amid the hustle and bustle, God reminded me of the power of compassion and the importance of seeing the divine in everyday acts of those around us. Ellie Gilbert. What will you find the next time you go to the grocery store, another busy place? Be alert for people who might help in little ways. Ask God to lead you in finding opportunities to show His love to others. Sometimes even the ordinary can spark a profound sense of connection with God. In our new devotional book, Where I Found God Today, you'll discover more than 100 devotions that each tell the story of a God moment in the author's life and offer an invitation to find a connection of your own. Order your copy at guidepost.org/found him or ask for it at your favorite bookstore. What prayer can do. Power in our day-to-day lives. Just One Miracle by Lindsay Burke, Anchorage, Alaska. Despite the chill that morning, I went out onto the deck in my pajamas to light a cigarette. For me, every day started with a smoke. I'd been a smoker for 24 years. I'd tried to quit more times than I could count. Over the years, I'd used nicotine patches, gum, willpower, and of course, prayer. But my cravings were just too powerful. They were even more powerful than the shame I felt over not being able to quit. I stubbed out my cigarette and went back inside to get dressed and face the day. I wasn't optimistic. Nothing in my life was going well. My marriage was in trouble. My family was in turmoil. My beloved dog had just died. Lately, it seemed as if my only bright spot was the rush I got from a cigarette. This was no time to quit. God, will things ever get better? I found myself wandering throughout the day. By dinner, I was feeling more down than ever. Unusual because I was a fighter by nature. I didn't crumble easily, and I prided myself on never giving up. Well, none of that is helping me now, I thought, putting away the dinner dishes. I was doing everything I could to keep going, but it seemed as if I wasn't getting anywhere at all. All at once, I found myself crying out to God, I can't do this by myself. I need something, anything. Just give me one miracle so I know you're there. I woke up the next morning feeling strangely energetic. It was hard to believe I'd had a breakdown like that just the night before. I plunged into my to-do list. A few hours later, I happened to glance at the clock. That's when it hit me. It was already 11:30, and I hadn't even had my morning smoke. I couldn't remember the last time that happened. Stranger still, I wasn't craving a cigarette. I decided to see how long I could go without having a smoke. Another hour? A whole day? So far, it's been 8 years. 8 miraculous years. Everything about me, my body, my soul, my relationships, is stronger and healthier than ever. Need prayer? Join the Our Prayer community. Submit your prayer requests and pray for others at ourprayer.org. That's all the time we have today for Guideposts. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.